Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Welcome back, everyone, to a new episode of Banking Reinvented, the podcast for changemakers. And today I'm joined by Sjors van der Zee, partner at Bain, and he's looking after the financial services vertical with a so-called customer-centric transformation focus and all of those activities with a technology angle. So Sjors, thanks for joining.
Thank you, Tim. Nice to be here.
Likewise, good to have you here. Maybe you can share a few more notes on your daily activities and what does it look like in the world of Bain?
Yes, I think it's an amazing time to be an advisor to the financial industry because there's so much things changing. If you look at how we bank today versus how we did that 20 years ago, it has nothing to do with each other. You still have an account, but how you operate it, how you access it, and what you actually do with it, it's changing. And also, if you look at the ecosystem, because we say financial services, banks, insurance companies, the ecosystem has evolved so much that that you need to anticipate on all these things. So it's a very nice time to support clients in transforming and keeping up with all these changes. And the tech angle there is extremely important because banks are actually becoming more and more tech companies over the last decade.
Yeah. Maybe to briefly double click on that one, banks becoming tech companies. It's something that, of course, for many years we've seen in the industry. Do banks come to you with that question or do they come with a transformational question with a certain business objective? Like, where does typically the dialogue start in your world?
Yeah, typically it starts with a business transformation, but you see that the tech angle is a key enabler and a holistic part of it. So only doing a tech transformation typically doesn't work. You need to basically do it integrated and do a biz and tech transformation integrated with also a big data layer in between or as part of that. But you cannot look at it in silos. It's fully intertwined.
Yeah, I'm definitely aligned to that. That's something we discuss in practically every episode. Technology on its own is not going to solve the challenge that we have here. So that's something we're going to be, let's say, unpacking in the coming 20 to 30 minutes. Before we do that, Sjors, I just want to highlight a few of the things that have been happening in the past few weeks in the industry, more specifically in the private banking / wealth management space. The first one is the expansion of Robinhood into wealth management. What is your take? What have you seen so far and what's the, let's say, response from your customer base in terms of the impact or how do they, let's say, digest this new introduction?
It's a reconfirmation that if you are a wealth manager, you need to transform because you basically get attacked from all sides. And let's say a tech-enabled player like Robinhood is climbing up the ladders and is basically for them acquiring bigger and bigger customers and moving into a space where the wealth managers also always thought we are protected by our relations. But that's no longer the case. And I think that's actually a very nice topic to discuss today.
Which we will. So this was specifically on Robinhood Strategies. We're now with Gold. They're basically offering a low-cost offering for professionally managed portfolio with an annual fee of only 0.25%. Capped at $250, and you can get into their offering with as little as $50 of investment, while you already get the full suite of capabilities that you would typically only find at a proper wealth management firm. So I think from that angle, indeed, to your point, it is time to transform, and the tech-enabled ones are clearly entering, which I think it's an exciting time, Sjors.
Exactly, and what you see is that the price point is so different than what wealth managers used to have, where you typically see 70, 80, 90, sometimes even above 100 basis points. And if you start to compete with someone that's only doing 25 basis points, you need to reinvent yourself because just scratching and increasing a bit of advisor productivity is not going to bring you anywhere close to such levels.
And unfortunately, you probably need to do both, right? You need to do your bottom line optimization and drive productivity, but also you need to grow your top line or at least hold it steady. Yeah. To me, it also very much aligns with transformation in the sense that you have to be ready to be able to digest these shocks. You have to be able to service your clients if you're a private bank or wealth management firm. How do you keep them at bay and cool and basically in the clear that they understand, we got you, right? I think that's one of the main things that typically in these weeks are top of mind. Am I doing the right thing? Do I need to stay put? Do I need to take action? Am I being looked after properly? Because the speed is just insane. Which dovetails properly into the meat of the session, Sjors. And my first question to you would be, what have you seen or what do you see as the main challenges facing wealth managers in the coming years?
Yeah, I think you see challenges on basically all fronts for wealth managers. And the first and foremost is it starts with the clients. What do clients want? Where wealth management was traditionally very traditional industry, human-centric around the advisor, a relationship-based business model, you see that is changing because the people can access wealth management services, also illustrated this week by a Robinhood, in so many ways these days that you need to also have that angle. And you need to also in wealth management really become multi-channel. You need to keep your human relationship because in the end there's the trust equation that you want to nurture, but you need to adopt also, let's say, all the digital possibilities. I think a second one is really the advisors. Also for them, there's a lot changing. They used to be really relationship managers with people in the back office supporting them in getting things done. And one of the true games that you need to play as a wealth manager now is really attracting, retaining, and empowering these advisors to, let's say, deal with these new clients and cater to their needs, making use of technology. And also this group is not always, let's say, has the highest digital affinity. So also there you have a challenge. And finally, the third one is really on the competitive field. You see that the traditional domain of private banks, yeah, is basically being disrupted by other players that also want to take a piece of the pie at scale. And you see as a result that margins are gradually going down and you need to reinvent yourself to keep differentiated compared to other solutions. So in summary, you see a client challenge, an advisor challenge, and basically a revenue challenge at the same time. And key is how to anticipate that.
Yeah, at a high level, I would agree these are the buckets that we observe in the market and also hear from our customer base. At the same time, there's also a change in the actual audience that you're looking to serve. At least there's this whole notion of the generational wealth transfer, which will happen within, I believe, a decade or so, where basically a large portion of the current high net worth, ultra high net worth individual, their funds will move to the next generation, which means you then all of a sudden need to service a very different audience with different expectations. Is that something that also plays into that mix, Sjors?
Yes, you see that that's actually one of the key challenges and opportunities at the same time for wealth managers, this generational wealth transfer. You see that currently a lot of the wealth is stuck at the baby booming generation, but you also see that they are actually preparing already for quite some time and will continue to do. To transfer that wealth, and the needs of those family members are actually quite different, and you need to anticipate to that. And you also see that many wealth managers actually actively do that, and they're not waiting, let's say, for the old generation to pass away, but actually put a lot of effort in securing to keep those assets within the bank.
Yeah, it seems like there's probably a moment in time where you're going to be let's say servicing a little bit traditional towards that, let's say, more older population, while at the same time you're becoming a bit more digital combined with human towards the newer population. So the mix of how you service towards them is, you know, allowing you to be successful with both ends of the spectrum. I guess that's the formula perhaps for the time being.
Exactly. And I think also we should not forget that also the baby booming generation, the baby boomers, by now most of them are also pretty tech savvy, and they also expect that, let's say, transactional things can be done via their phone. But however, they also want to have the opportunity. I call my advisor, and if I want something, I'll get it. So you basically need to really cater to both. And it's basically on the client, the individual client, where he or she puts the emphasis. So that makes it basically the most complex omni-channel experience you can deliver to a client.
Yeah, maybe it's a bit of a simplistic statement, but if you think almost to the basic level, your application will be next to Netflix, Spotify, Uber, you know, any of those proper digital native applications, perhaps even Robinhood. So that's the space in which you're competing, right? Even with the older population. Thanks for calling it out. I think that's a very clear point. Now, moving forward to the advisor, I think it's always interesting to call out that these advisors, they have a choice in a way, right? And there's also a bit of resistance to change when it comes to embracing digital and actually being supported by the latest and greatest when it comes to AI. Like, do you pick up on that as well? That there's a degree of, you know what, let me just do my work. I have my portfolio of clients. Actually, don't bother me as much with that digital ambition that you might have or the transformational ambition.
And look, it's a two-sided coin. If you see traditionally, the value of the advisor was his or her Rolodex, the client relations and the names. And many advisors wanted to keep those for themselves because that was actually their value in the market. That's what they worked for 20 years to get, this nice Rolodex of people in their pocket, so to say. At the same time, if you want to do things, if you want to capture the benefits of digital channels, of doing things faster, you basically need to adopt digital. And I think a key element there is that if you see how an advisor needs to deal with his client these days, and then I talk mainly about financial economic crime, security elements, you cannot do what you did in the past. Transferring €1 million via phone is just not a great idea security-wise. However, there are still quite a lot of banks that try to accommodate this because their clients and advisors have done this for decades. And that comes to an end. And you need to get a seamless experience for this client whilst making it secure. And the same goes for financial economic crime. You see that clients that have sometimes been banking for 20 or 30 years or even longer, generations long, with a certain bank, these clients now need to answer questions on the source of wealth and the source of their funds, where they say, hey, I've been with you for decades already. Why these questions now? And it's basically the regulatory bar is getting higher and higher. And in this relationship, you need as an advisor to change how you deal with your client. And they're actually, tech and digital can help them to make it more seamless. But it's not easy. And you need to balance that with this relationship play.
Yeah. So if I'm hearing you correctly, then there's a lot of administration heavy burden coming to the advisor, given that you need to service your clients within the regulatory framework, meaning you're actually going to a degree, annoy your clients with all these asks and filing all these documents and what have you. And I can imagine that for many of these institutions, it's relatively manual or paper-based or actually conversation-based to a degree. Like, you need to streamline that workflow in a way that it's as little annoying as it can be almost, so that it breathes digital to me. At the same time, the counter view, Shores, is that the wealth managers that I would typically speak with, there's one in particular that said, hey, my advisor is spending 70% of their time on non-productive activities, meaning internal dialogue, internal, let's say, compliance checks they need to do and what have you, before they can actually spend proper time with their clients. So that individual CEO had a very clear productivity issue with his advisors. So there, the transformational effort was mostly on, let's make it more efficient, let's make it more simple so they can spend way more time with their clients. I think that connects very well with your point.
Yes, exactly. And I think it If you do research on the most successful wealth managers globally, you see that they actually start to explore more and more different way to grow. Because in the past, the key way to grow was basically, I attract new advisors with a Rolodex in their pocket, and then I basically grow. That's sort of an inorganic perspective, which is actually quite an expensive way to grow. And if we look at the most successful wealth managers, what they do is really work on this advisor productivity to get this unproductive time as low as possible and allow them to really focus their time on this high value relationship building and building this relation of trust. And not spending all their time on the low added value activities like collecting data, liaising, and also, let's say, educating themselves. And their technology can really help them. And the good thing is, by putting them actually in at the place where they want to be, at the relationship, you also increase their satisfaction levels. Because many advisors, especially the let's say the ones that are longer in the business with typically the best pockets and the best portfolios, they were not used to all this admin work because in the past it was just not there. And that has been growing over time. And you can do part with assistance and let's say human support. But actually you can make it better for both the advisor and for the client by adopting digital, and also AI is playing a big role in there.
There we go. There is the word of the year, which brings me to the next step to explore. I think we've been speaking about this already at length also in other episodes with other guests here at the podcast. There is a massive opportunity, especially in this domain, when it comes to properly leveraging AI, machine learning, large language models, agents to actually be your right-hand digital worker and do a lot of that heavy lifting, all of that manual work, which can even be rather complex, but fully streamlined. I think theoretically, fantastic. Practically, I'd be curious to hear from your perspective if you already see an attitude towards leaning in or a willingness to basically have a bit more of a risk appetite and embrace those types of technologies. What are you seeing?
Yes. You see that many players at the moment are still a bit hesitant because many wealth managers have tried to, let's say, do old school digitalization. And actually there you typically see that the flexibility you want to cater to as a wealth manager in your customer experience is difficult to capture and make it digital. And I think that's the very nice thing about AI. It actually allows you to have a higher degree of flexibility in creating this. And what we see in practice is that the first thing that AI can do is actually help the advisor in providing this customized experience to their customer. So the AI is not always yet exposed fully to the customer itself, but typically to the advisor, and to help him or her to make this experience for the client more customized. And it can be in proposing more tailored communication, in nudging the advisor, hey, based on this and these events, you should reach out to these and these customers because in the past, they were actually extremely excited when you did this on that topic. So really to get to basically empower them with a second pair of brains, so to say.
Yeah. It's like your advisor agent that's 24/7, 365, on the ball, properly informed with all the information about that particular client, but also the behavior so far and how, let's say, the engagement has evolved. Is there also an opportunity when it comes to, let's say, interpreting what is happening in the market? For instance, right now, the past week with all these tariffs and the stock markets swinging up and down, I would actually go to Perplexity and do a little bit of an analysis, which gives me a bit of insight, intel. It's just one small example. And again, I'm not a professional at all, but it's one of those capabilities that you can clearly see coming to life. Or do you still see, well, the actual research, the interpretation, that's really with the investment managers, they deliver a point of view, and that's what we bring to the table? Like, what are the pockets where you see AI being applied, or let's say mature enough to become real in the, let's say, coming 6 to 12 months?
Now look, in the a good wealth manager is, next to the relationship angle, has a good content knowledge, can talk about tariffs, macroeconomics, and also in case of entrepreneurs, also talk and knows about the company of the individual client. And there, let's say you can really reduce this and make the educational perspective much more effective by using AI. As said, it can focus you. These are the topics that the person actually is most likely interested in. And it can also provide you such quick summaries on an individual company. You don't have to research for 2 hours now the individual company of the client. You can actually do it in 10 minutes and get the summary right. And this is really this advisor enablement to collect all this unstructured data, assess it, prioritize it for you, and help the advisor in being more effective towards the client.
Yeah, I like how you bucket it. You say it's advisor enablement. We make their jobs easier. You actually make them more powerful, better informed, more productive, given that with AI you can actually 3x, 5x their preparation work and really bring down the time to get to a quality deliverable. Towards the clients, right now I'm hearing you say human in the loop. The AI does not get exposed to the actual client. Do you feel there's going to be a moment where that is going to be exposed to the client, and there's actually a, let's say, relationship manager, GPT or chatbot, or in any way a functionality of that exposed to the individual, where they can prompt and collaborate, and maybe when needed, they raise a flag and talk to a human? Would you ever see that come to life?
Yes, in some markets, and in particular in Asia, they are actually going a bit further than in Europe. Where you actually see that on the content you provide to a customer, actually there's already quite a lot of AI involved to choose and select what do we put and what do we push to what clients. And you can still do that right now within boundaries, but you will see that growing and maturing. Of course, the question is, how far will this go? And I think at this moment in time, no one can really tell. However, what you see is where, let's say, the first wave of AI was really focused on the productivity elements of things, like reading documents and extracting data and that kind of things. You now see that you can go to content generation and tailoring the messages to this individual client. And that's the field where, in the next couple of months and years, we do foresee a big change. First controlled by the advisor, but once this is up and running and you see that there's more belief and more confidence that it actually is valuable, you will see that continue to grow. Now, adding to that, always keeping the regulatory elements into play. You need to do this in such a controlled way that you can basically show to the regulator, I fulfill all my regulatory duties and this is fit for purpose for the client. And that's also the reason why you cannot do this tomorrow at scale and first do this via the advisor. And then once it's matured, go directly to the client.
I would say that's a very smart move, also realistic, given where the technology is right now, which also changes and innovates on a weekly basis almost. Maybe to build on top of your point, if you listen to one of the keynotes from the CEO of NVIDIA, he's basically introducing the digital worker, where there's multiple different digital workers that will take certain parts of the, let's say, value chain that you have internally, which, let's say, as a mental concept, if you look at all the roles that the advisor has around them internally to support and drive progress, there could be a moment in time where the majority of those are in principle and primarily digital workers, which again comes back to the margin pressure that you opened up the episode with. Like if you see the benefits that could compound there over time, I think they're very material. So not moving means you don't have that benefit. Not moving also means you're a bit more safe, sure. But there are certainly going to be players out there that will embrace this pretty aggressively and start standing out, not just in the way they have their cost income ratio, if I may, like they'll be very efficient, but also this will open them up to more differentiating value propositions, deeper value that they bring to the client base, even less overhead on the actual advisor that can be in the field with their clients and really doing their best work potentially. So I think there's this whole domain, which I think theoretically it sounds amazing and it's the future state. It would be interesting to see where are we in 6 months, where are we in 12 months, 18 months and so forth. So maybe you and I can connect again in 6 months and see where the industry is.
No, exactly. And I think typically what I see is that you need to start with this. And there's sometimes hesitation. Are we already ready for this? But I think not starting is actually not an option. And you need to start to adopt this. We started this podcast with saying, hey, competition is on the line. Margins are under pressure and you'll need to cope with that. And technology is actually the key to the biggest lever in wealth management, which is advisor productivity. It's your most expensive people by far, and getting their productivity up and actually get them happier by not having them involved in all this admin work is really the key to unlock additional growth, which is in the end the key in this exciting industry.
A few things are clicking here on my end, because the words you're using a few episodes back, actually I think last week, we talked about unlock growth mode. As financial institutions, that's typically the question we now hear in the industry. How do we actually get into growth mode again? What does that look like? And how does technology play a primary role in doing so? I'm practically hearing you share a same view that to get into growth mode, to remove those barriers, A, you have to get started. That is a very clear call out. You don't want to sit back and see what the others are doing. But also B, maybe before we go to the summary, the how we didn't discuss as much just yet. And you mentioned also in the beginning, like there's a very strong technology angle to the work that you do at Bain. What do you typically see are the challenges to actually implement this vision? What does the how look like, Sjors?
In the end, the key thing is to have a very clear picture on how, what you want to achieve with your technology. What experiences do you want to create both for the advisors and for the clients? And to have a very clear prioritization in what do we want from a business angle. And then you need to translate that to the tech stack in an experience layer, in an integration layer, and also in the underlying data and AI layer, and then connect that back to, let's say, the core investment and other product administration systems. And have a very clear picture on where you want to go there, business-wise and technology-wise. Once you have that, you can actually start to experiment and get this thing going.
So what you're describing is like the if you zoom out macro, it's like a blueprint of what ingredients do you need to bring to the table to move into the new, let's say, model, which essentially is a platform model, if I may. You're calling out three distinct layers, like the experience layer, the data and AI layer, where you really make things smart. It's AI powered. There's probably everything coming together with machine learning, AI, and so forth. And there's also the integration layer that downstream basically leverages everything you have today, I would imagine. Yeah. Sounds like a big thing, right? How do you approach this in a way that, let's say, every 3 to 6 months you make proper progress versus it becoming a massive multi-year program? Do you have a view on that, Sjors?
Yes, what we typically start with is with experimentation. You see that to get used to using, let's say, agents on internal data, and it can be product conditions, it can be investor documents, it can be many internal things to actually start on those, let's say, simple modest applications and get basically on all these layers, get everyone experienced. Have the experience of the advisor to get used to working a bit differently, to get experience in, hey, how do we create this? How can we plug this on the data and AI layer? And also on the integration, how can we basically connect the dots to get this going? Start small. However, what we see typically, and that's why I started it, you need to have a good view on these layers. It's typically not a problem to start only with this use case, but actually the scaling of it, that is typically where we see that most players are struggling to really get the adoption high at all the advisors because they're not used to it, to drive the adoption at clients. And also to be able to reuse components of this initial pilot to say, let's say a second use case and a third use case and a fourth use case. So therefore, at the same time, experiment, but also try to get the bigger picture and have clarity on that, how you want to organize this this structurally, also to avoid that you basically build technical debt from day one.
If I hear you correctly, you're basically saying you move into a platform, but you start small, use case based, and you implement it all the way. So with all the different departments that are impacted, all the roles that are impacted, so that it really sticks in the day-to-day as you've been building out this use case and introducing it. I think that very much connects to our view on progressive modernization. Like, how do you modernize your technology stack? How do you move away from a big bang, replatforming major, let's say, efforts? I think by now, a decade ago, I wouldn't have been able to share this view, but by now the technology is so mature, so composable and modular that you can actually go, let's say, step by step, use case by use case, while gradually you move into a future-proof platform, which is seriously preventing you from building yet another wave of legacy, because that's the alternative, right? Building on top of what you already have, or building a maybe acquiring a point solution that solves the first use case but is not able to solve the second, you again get this whole spaghetti of infrastructure that will not really give you the value and hence will not allow you to grow at the rate you're looking to grow. So I think that very much matches in terms of views. That's appealing to hear. Any final part on, let's say, the layers and the, let's say, move into the platform that you would add?
Yeah, I think in coming a bit back to wealth management, you see that also many wealth managers traditionally are companies where that are less tech savvy, especially the independent ones. They, if you look at the waves of tech and digital, it started in retail banking with the most complex things. And you see that their maturity is typically, they typically do a bit more in-house. And you see that still many wealth managers also use a lot of capabilities of third parties for products, sometimes even a BPO model. And what's key is, as a wealth manager, we believe you do need to also start building some tech capability yourself, because you need to be the orchestrator. And maybe you don't have to do everything yourself, but you need to be able to steer your suppliers and providers into the right direction, that you can actually prioritize the use cases and also see that you can get it done. That does require a higher level of capability, basically in all these layers that we just discussed of a wealth manager, which is for many typically not their traditional stronghold. So they will need to keep up to keep up the game.
Now, if I think about the audience listening to this, the message I'm hearing is you need to build this blueprint, which to me also could potentially move into the trap of reinventing the wheel to a degree. Meaning if you need to build all those layers and do all that work, there's going to be 1, 2, maybe 3, if not more years before you actually get to start delivering proper business value. How do you see that in the industry? Do you see an appetite to say, we go completely self-built, we become an IT factory ourselves? Or do you see, hey, we need to go fast. Yes, we need to have a capability to innovate, but we're not going to do everything on our own. We're going to stand on the shoulders of giants, potentially.
No, I think the wealth management industry is actually very much used to work with partners. And that goes on the asset management side. If you look at even bigger wealth managers, asset management is a skill game. And you see so many players that say, look, on these asset classes, we cannot compete to, the gigantic players that run things globally, like a BlackRock. And so they're used to work with partners to basically get the skill out of the partners. So, and they do that on the asset management side for certain pockets, and also in their technology stack, they will need to work with partners to actually get access to the capability. So I would not say you need to build this layers and this tech architecture. You need to ensure that you have access to it and actually have the flexibility to operate it. But there will be a big dependency on technology partners in getting there.
Yeah. So in a way, it's more of a, what is your vision? What should the blueprint look like? And then find the partnerships that can help you get there fast.
Exactly. And if you look at what is the core capability of a wealth manager, for me, it's twofold. One, understanding their customers. That's where advisors should really focus on what is actually the need of this customer and how can I basically give the best experience and satisfy the needs of that customer? And secondly, provide this customer access to state-of-the-art investment propositions. Because that's in the end still the added value of wealth manager, where many people look at it, is how do you manage my wealth? Do I have access to the best solution? And it's not always the highest return. There's also security and there's other preferences. But if you can combine those two things, that's where the wealth manager should focus on. And basically everything we just discussed should enable this wealth manager to double down on these two axes.
Clear. All right, George, we're going to go for the key takeaways. And what I will do, I will summarize a few of the key highlights that I feel for the audience are, let's say, helpful takeaways that they can bring tomorrow to their work, if I may. And then following that, if there's anything you would like to highlight or add just to be more complete, the floor is yours. So first of all, we opened up the episode stating that competition is ramping up. In that sense, we spoke a little bit about Robinhood, which is just one of many examples where tech-enabled or, let's say, digital native players that have a platform, that have a vast, execution engine to go to market, are also entering this domain, so wealth management and private banking. They also enter at a very low entry barrier with a pretty complete value proposition. So I think for the client or the customer, they are winning in the sense that there's more competition, there's more happening in this space. So everyone needs to step up their game to a degree. We spoke a little bit about the margin pressure that is also really there in the industry. So in any shape or form, you have to make a move. And what we discussed today is what are the transformational options that you have, which then follow on into a technology decision or a technology blueprint you could go for and really pick up the pace with. Then we spoke at length about the combination of the human interaction and the direct relationships you're building with your client base through the advisors, complemented by digital. And that tooling really needs to amplify the human capability and the human touch almost towards the client base. And then lastly, we spoke about how do you actually retain those advisors? Because they are the ones that do hold the Rolodex. They want to do the proper work to have an impact on the client base, less so on admin. How do you amplify their work, make them more productive, and indeed leverage AI to get there faster? So we spoke a little bit about the trade-offs on the risk involved and what type of attitude and risk aversions do you have in a firm, which right now means that we conclude that relative resistance to change in terms of we do apply AI, but we keep it in-house. There's always a human in the loop, and only when it matures further, it might have a spot also towards the end client. And then overall, if you want to make this move, we discussed the blueprint, an experience layer, a data and AI layer, and an integration layer, which combined allow you to future-proof your institution. There's partners out there that you can play with, like Backbase as an example. But mostly the statement I believe from you, Shores, is get a vision in place that allows you to drive forward, get started, literally, and figure out who the partners are that can get you on that fast track as soon as possible. That was my summary from this, let's say, half hour. Anything you would add or highlight, Sjors? Anything I missed?
No, I think it's a very solid, solid and comprehensive summary. Yeah, I think to emphasize, the key element here is two things. Your clients are actually changing as a wealth manager, so you need to change. You need to, and your advisors are key to making this change. Because if your advisors are not changing, your business is not changing. And actually, technology is bringing a win-win for both of them. So those incentives are actually extremely aligned, and you need to make that system go forward. And then as a result, there's a bottom line impact, and that's the only way to cope with this margin pressure. And I think thereby it's quite a consistent thing. And the only thing what you should not do is not do anything, because then you will be eaten.
Clear. Good closing words. The pressure is on, or at least there's clear urgency. Sjors, thank you so much for joining. For those in the audience who want to learn more, we just released a white paper together with yourself, Sjors, and your colleagues, which is a private banking and wealth management white paper to basically have a view on the industry. So basically look at our channels. You can find it there. If not, feel free to reach out to either of us on LinkedIn. Having said that, thanks for spending time with me today here, Sjors, and sharing your insights. And let's agree that we reconnect in 6 months and again have a view on where we are in the industry.
Sounds like a plan. Looking forward to it.
Great. Likewise. Thank you so much for joining. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jauke and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.